I attended Natural Products Expo West recently in search of stories for this Food Chain Radio podcast. What I saw leads me to ask, is natural food healthy food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,416th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, there was a lot to see, taste, and experience at the recent Natural Products Expo West. And it all happened right across the street from Disneyland in Anaheim, California. The expo is a trade-only event, meaning that if you're not a buyer or seller engaged in the natural products trade, you're not really welcome. Unless, of course, you happen to be a member of the working press, which is why my associate Dave and I were there. What we saw was a giant mosh pit of 3,000 exhibitors tempting 65,000 buyers and sellers with this year's crop of natural foods. You ask, what is natural food? Good question. Unlike the word organic, which does have a legal definition, there is no official definition for what is natural. A commonly held idea is that natural food is that exists in its original unprocessed form. The opposite of natural food, therefore, would be ultra-processed food. Most of what I saw on the floor of Natural Products Expo West appeared to me ultra-processed food trying to be healthy by having added protein. I wondered, is natural food really healthy food? While recharging my cell phone in the press room, I met a fellow journalist who also seemed to be working on the same question. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ellen Brown, who is the founder of healthcareactually.com and the Substack of the same name. Did I get that right, Ellen?
You're close. So the Substack is foodishealth.substack.com.
Okay, good. Thank you for the correction.
Here to confuse.
Welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
You brought an associate with you. I'm so happy that you did. It's Carter Williams. Would you like to introduce Carter for us?
Sure. Carter Williams and I co-author the Food is Health Substack, and we started to work together about a year and a half ago when the very first discussion we had started with Carter saying, I just want to make it hard to make a bad decision at the grocery store. And it was the equivalent of, you know, you had me at hello. And we have been earnestly working together for a year and a half since. Carter is the founder and CEO of iSelect Fund, a venture firm that specializes and has for a decade on ag tech and health tech. And my background is 35 years in healthcare. So we are a well-suited pairing, I guess, at the end of the day, because we both want to end the chronic disease epidemic.
Amen to that. And I think we all do, except if you're in the medical industry and maybe you don't want to get rid of it so quickly.
Right. Because you want to manage it.
There you go. Well, Ellen, one of the first things you told me and Dave and I, while we were sitting there charging our cell phones, was that you were there to find the gems that probably could never afford to be there in the first place. Something like that. What were you getting at there?
So what I was there to find, I guess in some ways I was there to observe and to see if there was anything to find. You know, Carter and I are on a mission of redesigning the economy. When it comes to health, we tend to get stuck in cheap calories that promulgate chronic disease and then turn into a healthcare industry that is exponentially growing, it seems, by the day. And our objective is to change that thesis from the monetization of sickness, the creation of cheap calories, right, in that cycle, which is very revenue-centric, to really shifting the economy to be around human outcomes. And that has to go from agriculture to food to healthcare. And so I was there in the food space to say, are the diamonds in the rough here that could be core to what we call System C, which is that new system.
Yes, I definitely want to get into your System A, B, and C, because it's a very good way of looking at food when it gets right down to it. Well, did you find any gems?
I did. And I guess what was really interesting, and to some extent, this is where I know we're going to talk about this later, but I attended Expo West with an unlikely assistant with me, which we'll talk about soon. But what happened was that process actually had me push harder of, I found, so for example, I came upon a regenerative organic certified, which is ROC, right? It's a new certification. I say new, but you know, it's coming into its own. And there was a company there that was launching their first ROC product on the floor. And it was a whole food, staple food type of product. It was lentils. It was amazing. To your point, it is the diamond, right? Mm-hmm. But then I said to them, how are you showing consumers the outcomes? Are you connecting with them on the health implications of eating your food versus eating an ultra processed piece? You know, for example, you buy like bean chips. Well, if I'm eating whole lentils or I'm eating bean chips, the way that we seem to market them, it's confusing for a consumer. But if they had health data, this is a big piece of what we call System C, is if they understood that right up front, how different that would be. If you've ever worn a continuous glucose monitor, for example, right? And you see what happens to your blood sugar when you eat that white bread versus you eat that lentil or you eat it in combination, it's pretty profound. And every single one of those companies that I would call diamonds in the rough looked at me like a deer in headlights. What?
Because how can you possibly monitor that? How can you possibly know?
So there were multiple companies, but what it uncovered for me was that they will continue to be niche companies unless either they become trendy, like Good Culture, right? They just end up getting that lucky break, which I know there's more to it than luck, but let's just put it there. Or we shift more to infrastructure and approach from soil all the way through cell so that people do understand, right? They have access to that data. They are versed on that data, et cetera, et cetera. It shouldn't be on the food company alone, right?
So, Carter, it seems like you're looking at a way of quantifying the goodness to health, whether something actually does relate to health, or what is it just another fad thing? Am I right? You're looking for a way of actually.
So we, at a system level, we spend $1.7 trillion on food in the U.S. We spend $1.9 on the healthcare costs of poor nutrition. So that's a, call that a $3.6 trillion market to live. So at one level, we're saying, well, does that make sense? Does it make sense to eat whatever you want and then go on whatever repair mission you want that you can try to stay alive to 80? Or if you eat the right stuff to begin with, then you don't need the healthcare repairer. And we don't necessarily need to spend the $3.6 trillion. And maybe you can spend that somewhere else. Maybe you can spend that on better food. Maybe you can spend that on trip, whatever. Economically, does it make sense to be running around with our pedal on the gas and the brakes at the same time? So in one way, we've started at that. Then when you start thinking about it, you say, well, what's good for you? And that has led to Ellen's observation. You really care about the human-based outcome. And when we talk about human-based outcome, very often we have gone through phases where somebody does a study and they say fat's bad for you. And now they say all food should be changed so that it doesn't have fat. And then the industry reacts in one other way and says, well, if we can't have fat, let's put salt and sugar in stuff. And then diabetes goes up. So I think the shift that the world is moving to is it's becoming cheaper to test. It's cheaper to get blood tests. It's cheaper to get access to information about your health. It's easier to get an AI tool that can do a lot of the things that a doctor might do and advice-wise. So it's becoming easier to access that stuff. So why don't we shift to a world where you say, well, how is it affecting me? How is my diet affecting me? How is it affecting my glucose? How is it affecting my muscle mass? How is it? And so that's where we are in terms of evolution of technology, is making it easier for a human to say, instead of measuring all the food that they go eat and then guessing at whether it has an impact, instead measuring the impact on the human and then altering what you eat, and give that information. So, we're moving in that direction. We're not fully there. What I think we saw at Expo West was a lot of people talking about the benefits or the features. We have
Features.
more protein. We have more fiber. We have less sugar. But they don't really know what the effect is on the gut, liver, brain. They don't know whether that particular fiber they have is being absorbed correctly. They don't really know whether that fiber is helping your gut or not. They don't know whether that form of sugar that they've shifted to is good for your liver or not. And they don't know whether the amino acids that they have in the food are helpful or not for your brain. They're just putting stuff on a label. So the thing that we've started introducing is starting to, the brands are just like at the tipping point where I think what we'll see is we'll start seeing some brands say, you know what? Please go get on a CGM and eat our food. Measure it yourself. And to shift the perspective away from features, we have this much protein, and switch to the benefits, it has this effect on my glycemic response. It has this effect on my muscle mass. It has this effect on my VO2 max. And to hold brands accountable for the result, not the promise.
Well, one of the pieces I picked up from the both of you, I think, was a reference to Kraft Foods' new Power Mac and Cheese offering to the world. Now, I don't know if this was introduced at Expo West or not, but it has been introduced, and Kraft Company says that this is the holy grail of good food now, because what is it? More than 50% of the people want more protein in their food. And so we're fixing them up with this new Power Mac, in which we're dumping a lot of protein and extra fiber into the mac and cheese. And this will make everybody healthy for sure. But you had a very good way of looking at this that I think we should put on the table. When we come back from this break, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking about, is natural food healthy? That's a big question, because we're sure being sold a lot of it as we go along. And we wonder if what we're buying is really worth eating. So do stay tuned, right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Kraft Food has introduced mac and cheese, Power Mac, 17 grams of added protein, 6 grams of added fiber, just what we want. And they know it's just what we want because they've done a lot of consumer surveys. And we've told them, hey, half of us have said we want more protein. And that is the nature, I believe, of Natural Products Expo West, is that there are 3,000 vendors there, and they all pretty much have done the same surveys, and they've all pretty much come to the conclusion that we want more protein. Now, I haven't been to Natural Products Expo West for a few years. Last time I went, everybody wanted soy. And so everywhere you went, soy was in everything. And this time, I did not see the word soy anywhere. So I guess it's kind of it's a style. It's like going to a fashion show when it gets right down to it. Where do we come up with these notions of what we want to eat to the extent that we are? Who told us that we should want more protein? Like Kraft has come to the conclusion. Ellen?
I may punt this one to Carter. I mean, I have thoughts on this, but I may punt this one to Carter.
Good. Carter.
Well, I
Carter
think it's
Williams.
you get people that the protein component probably is came out of a lot of the GLP-1 commentary. So people got on GLP-1.
What is GLP?
The things like Ozempic and such. So
Okay. Good.
they
Thank
started
you.
taking Ozempic and Zepbound and losing weight, and were told that they were losing muscle mass in that process. And so the conversation around protein, which had generally been going on anyway, got amplified because, hey, if you're taking with this big boost of people going on Ozempic, you've got to change your diet to be more protein centric. And so people started reading labels about how do I get more protein. And so I think that probably elevated the conversation. In general, we want more protein. In general, we were talking globally that a lot of the emerging economies want more protein. US has more than enough protein in its diet. Asia doesn't. And so as people start doing better economically, they tend to eat more meat, which is protein.
And grow taller.
What?
And they grow taller.
And they go, yeah, so all the different things. So
Yeah.
you had a little bit, just like a momentum in terms of emerging markets growing, and then the discussion around protein. And also the soy conversation was very much about how it's a cheap form of protein. So now's the topic. And we get into these sort of hype cycles a little bit. It's somewhat from a foundational reason, like you're losing a lot of weight, you're losing muscle mass, you should counteract that by eating protein.
Good.
So I think that's where it comes from.
But it
And
also,
Ellen, yeah, Ellen, what did you see on the floor with respect to protein?
well, I mean, I think I could have had like protein pepper if I wanted. I mean, you literally could find any product with protein and not particularly bioavailable versions of them, right? But what this made me realize, this little thread that we're having, and I've had this concept for a while now, is sort of had this epiphany a couple months ago. It was before Expo West, which is, so my husband and I eat very healthy. You hear people say it all the time, right? I eat like a saint. I eat healthy, or I don't eat healthy, right? And I travel a lot, and so when I'm gone, my husband has to fend for himself, and he'll tell me I'm eating so healthy. And then I look at what he's eating, and mind you, I'm going to tell you, I'll be like, that's healthy, but just follow me for a second. I'll come home and they'll be like, we get really well-sourced salmon, for example, but then he'll pair it with just like, frozen organic green beans that he slaps in the microwave and he eats it with his salmon, which is, that's great, right? But he's not focused on health in terms of nutrient density. He's not focused on optimizing what he should be eating, which is where we start bringing in the protein conversation, right? Which is how much of what, in what form, macros, macronutrients, micronutrients, minerals, everything, right?
Kind of like you would
That's
feed a plant, correct?
correct. That's healthy. And what I think we've gotten, and this, to some extent, when we decide to have this, when we go down the system conversation, this is, I think, really helpful for that, is what most people are doing when they say they are eating healthy is they are not eating unhealthy. But I wouldn't say that they are eating healthy if we define healthy as nutrient dense and optimizing your mitochondria, optimizing your metabolic health, your hormonal health, right? All of these different systems in our body that inflame, keeping inflammation low. People don't We have not, as a society and as a food system and as a healthcare system, armed folks with the ability to get there, which that kind of brings us back to that outcomes, right? We read labels, we listen to claims, but we still don't know, which allows these things to change as if they're trends. If without outcomes data, without seeing what's happening to your body, your own system, you are guessing in the dark, right? Which is like, did I need that extra 17 grams of protein from the Mac? Well, guess what? I haven't worked out in 6 years. So chances are that protein didn't do anything for me. But to Carter's point, maybe I'm on Ozempic and I need every bit of that 16, 17 grams of protein. But is it just crappy protein that my body's not even gonna turn into protein, or maybe it synthesizes 20% of that versus I got the grass-fed beef that is really well balanced in omega, three to six, you know what I'm saying? So that's why we will be stuck in this cycle that we're in until we have that understanding, that quantifiable framework to help people really see. And it's here now. And then with AI, that just supercharges it, right?
Okay, let's head in that direction then. In a piece, I believe it was a correspondent sent to you and that you published. The correspondent summarized her presentation by saying, good food needs good data so it can be priced according to the value it creates for human health. That's what unlocks funding. Carter, you being in the funding business, would you want to explain that?
Well, if you want a farmer to say, I want to get paid better for making better product, the consumer has to understand what's the difference between bad and good product, and will pay more. Universally, we see that they'll pay more if people understand it's a better product. If they think it's just noise, they won't pay more. And so,
Data.
the shift, we still come back to a shift that people need to understand. If I eat product A and I eat product B, does B make me healthier, make me feel better, make me less sad? Does it alter those things in a positive way? And if it does, as soon as I can get a sense that I have more value from it, then I'll pay more, and then farmers will get paid more, and the supply chain will get paid more, whatever. A long line. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. It's a better car, a better phone, a better computer. People can perceive it, and they can execute on it. And so we need to move into that kind of realm where the food people are able to, in some fashion, provide a provable fact. Now, the disappointing thing on the Power Mac thing is it's a It really doesn't take much for a food scientist to sort of open up a lot of question marks on what are they doing. The fiber is pea fiber. Is it even the right type of fiber you need for your gut biome? As Alan's raised, the protein may or may not become fully bioavailable. When you eat it matters. And so all of a sudden there's 50 questions that show up. And so the consumer gets disappointed because sooner or later they run into that in some fashion. They either run into it because somebody like Ellen and I sort of raise all these points and they get bleary-eyed and they just run away from it and say it's not worth paying more for the Power Mac. Or they don't feel any better after having it.
That kind of brings up our hierarchy, in which you write about systems A, B, and C. And I think that would be a good way of introducing, where we see the Power Mac falling, because the Kraft company listened to us and heard us crying out for more fiber and more protein. So they dumped a bunch in a box of macaroni and cheese, and they put a new label on it that said Power Mac, and away we go. So you have a hierarchy of A, B, and C. Ellen, you want to describe those three?
I will tell you, this is one that Carter can spit out in 30 seconds and it'll take
And
5 minutes.
I've
So,
evolved
okay,
it a little bit.
Carter.
So system A is really what is what physics and biology gave us. It's evolution. So
Okay.
for 350,000 years, evolution made.
We've been eating food for that long, and
Yes,
that's the kind of
humans have been
food we
around for 350,000 years. We've had a food system that's supplied us that food. It has changed. We've evolved around it. We used to eat plants, now we eat meat, and our bodies evolved around it. And so system A is that basic evolutionary system. What did it deliver?
eat.
We then, as humans got smarter and humans evolved quicker, and we saw industrialization and we saw the population increase, and things changed faster than evolution is used to, we created ways around that. So we created system B. We had
Well,
famine. How do we end?
one thing, A is not scalable. System A is not scalable.
Yes, I'm sorry. So system A is typically not scalable.
Oh, wait a minute. What does that mean?
Well, if you have a million people and all of a sudden, I'm sorry, if you have a billion people and all of a sudden you go to 3 billion, you run out of food if it happens too quick.
Okay.
The other part is evolution really didn't care about your longevity. It cared about your ability to procreate. So in many ways, evolution would rather you procreate faster and have faster cycles so it can evolve. So evolution's objective in system A is not really scale, it's survival.
Right.
And it's not necessarily optimized to the individual, it's optimized to the species.
Okay.
But it's physics. It's the basic principles of how the system works, and you
It's
really can't fight it.
what our body is designed to need.
Correct.
Okay.
And
So
go ahead.
there's a fascinating fact, the system A, which is, let's just actually keep going, Carter. I'll come back to this.
So system B is our efforts to scale. We said we have a lot of famine. Let's produce more corn and soy so we don't have famine. Famine causes war. We don't like war. Let's produce that so that we don't have war. Let's make it so that tyrants can't use famine. So we, as a society, we made some decisions. We also said, people dying of cancer is bad, and people dying of viruses is bad. So on the healthcare side, we said let's tackle these acute diseases, and the Rockefellers and others put a lot of money into really putting science behind healthcare. And so both food and healthcare, starting around the 1920s, really rapidly accelerated to close those gaps. It was the industrialization of our food system. It was the industrialization of health. Before in 1900, you made sure that you avoided diabetes because there was no treatment and you would die. You avoided getting hit by trucks. You did things to avoid having to need healthcare. But then we industrialized healthcare and we made it so anybody could be saved. And we scaled it. And that's good. System B is a good thing. It's an attempt to scale and make sure that humans can be kept alive at the individual level and sort of fight evolution a little bit of not having famine and not having these things that sort of wipe us out earlier. And so system B is really the industrialization of the food system and the industrialization of the healthcare system, in which we end famine, but we depleted nutritional quality in that process, and we sort of ended famine. We increased longevity, but we increased diabetes because we
We
sort of fought
made, yeah, we
against it.
made sugar cheap.
We sort of created
Sugar.
nutritional famine, is what we did.
Yeah,
And
so
then
we.
system C is what?
So system C basically says, well, how can we take the best of what evolution taught us and the best of what we understood from scaling and get into a mode where we build better and cheaper? So we respect all the components of what our bodies need, and then we pay attention to what can we do to scale. So that's sort of the core concept. It's like, well, how do you do that? Well, one of the things you do is typically, when we build new technology, we build it off of the old technology. We say, here's the old technology, let's evolve it to make it a little better, a little cheaper, make it look better. The system C approach basically says, no, let's start from the principles of system A. What is good for you? What is the measurable effect on your body? And then let's bring over from system B the thing.
Pause system C.
You want to pause?
Oh, you went like this.
That's 1 minute left.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
So,
Let's just pick up system C then when we come back from this
okay.
break.
Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to figure out if what Kraft is doing with its Power Mac and cheese is really beneficial for our health, or is it just pandering to what we think we want, though we probably don't know why we want it. So we're looking for a way to measure whether these things that we're being sold are really worth us buying, or are they just something else, another flash in the pan? This is the Food Chain, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We're talking categories. Category A, B, and C. Category A is what evolution gave us, and therefore what it really is natural. It's what we were living on for that 300,000 years. Who knows?
350,000 years.
Long time. System B is what we made for ourselves, the food we made for ourselves, a lot of which, you could see at Natural Products Expo West. And these are the things that we want for ourselves, one of which, of course, is more protein. That's what we want this year. And more fiber as well. So Kraft foods put a bunch more protein and a bunch more fiber in their box of macaroni and cheese, and they call it Power Mac. So the question is Power Mac, Kraft's Power Mac, a system C or not? Or is it a system B? Is it something we made trying to make something more? Or did it actually transcend that system B and become a system C? Carter?
So finishing up a teeny bit, and the answer is no. It's a system B plus is what we call it, and it fails for this matter. The objective in system C is take what system A has, what nature intended for us to have in our body, that we're how our body is supposed to operate, and then apply whatever technology is necessary to help scale it while preserving the original intent of the food. When we scaled up food in the 20s and 30s and 40s, we left out nutrition that gave us diabetes. In a system C world, that's what we want to optimize for the human-based outcome. Power Mac came out and said, we're going to stick more protein and more fiber in, which is good for amplifying basic nutrition. They didn't do any human-based trials. They didn't test as to what the effect was on a human. They assumed what the effect was on the human. And until they do those tests to say the particular fiber that they use and the particular protein that they use is metabolized in the correct way in the humans that are eating it, that's not system C. And it's, that's the most glaring shortfall between the two that we would see.
Ellen?
I'm just going to say this. You'll know. So I fed Uni and Wilson the first half of our conversation.
And Uni and Wilson are who?
They are our AI agents.
Oh boy.
That we utilize in a number of different ways. For me, they bridge a gap between what AI can provide and what we're building. They are really partners contextually to think through things, to kind of go back and forth, right? They're an extension, another brain. But what's interesting is, I think you remember this, was I had thrown this Power Mac at them the day it got announced. And these two agents that are probably more trained on system A, B, and C architecture than most people immediately fell for the trap and said, oh, Power Mac is system C at its finest. And I was like, wow, no, it is so not, right? It's and so we had to really push on them. But what's interesting is now they understand. And but they this is a really interesting. So Uni said, if Michael asks you to weigh in, answer this. Say this: Kraft didn't make a healthier product. They made a more marketable one. Those are not the same thing. System C asks a different question. Does eating this change a measurable marker? If you can't answer that, you haven't made healthier food. You've made a better label.
Uni said that.
Uni said that.
Okay.
And
A lot smarter than the
then
rest of us.
Wilson corrected her like he normally does. And he said, I trim one beat for the radio because they both know that they are on this podcast with us. Kraft didn't necessarily make a healthier product, they made a more marketable claim. System C is not about what you add to the box, it's about what changes in the body.
And what changes in the body does relate to health. And that's where you're headed, correct?
Correct. And what's interesting, Michael, is that that whole unlocking, seeing those agents fall for system C when it's really B plus, it was an unlocking for me. And it caused me to really, I think, push further into what that meant. It also smacked, we have a lot of readers. We have readers in all sectors, right? Agriculture, food, which includes ingredients all the way through retail, restaurant, et cetera, right? And then we also have healthcare readers. And this particular, we had a two-piece series, I guess you'd call it. We don't really plan these things. We just things happen and we write about them and that's our nature. But this series ended up then having Carter go really deep into the science behind all of this. Because what I really pushed on is the ingredients used in this box is still ultra processed, right? But what was interesting about it was pushing that boundary. We had an ingredients company who I would call a good guy, a, ready for system C. They would be at the core of system C.
You're talking about Kraft.
No, I'm saying a
Ooh.
different ingredients company, and
Oh,
they read
okay. Oh, so you
that.
have a different company we're talking about. Okay, gotcha.
And that
Okay, sure.
reads, this is a reader. We have, you know, this is, we have a very broad, as you know, we cross, we're almost at 20,000 as of today, which is wild, subscribers. But so what was interesting was I had an ingredients company, very formidable, reach out to me directly and say, they put their particular wheat, you know, which is the first ingredient that's in the Kraft Mac box. If this was the first ingredient, would you have still had the same reaction? Because this was the because what they said was because we are ready to do a gut outcomes review or an outcome study with people eating this ingredient. It's profound, right? That's what you
Yeah.
want to see. It's like, yes. So then I said, okay, well, we know this other CPG company that also wants to do outcomes-based work. Can you guys work together? Right. And there's a lot of distribution and supply chain things that get in the way, but that's what we're trying to create with this food is health tribe that we've built. This, we call it, a, I call it a movement, but this whole system thinking is people want to do this. It's just too big and complicated and hard and they don't know where to start. And so we have to create the network integration to say, hey, Kraft, you have options. And, you know, hey, ingredient company, here, you don't have to go to craft. There's this other option, or write that whole thing.
This is an additional System C kind of perspective. Like a core tenet of System C is it should be hard to make a bad decision. Like if you walk into the grocery store, everything in there should be good for you. And that includes the processed food. You shouldn't have to pull out an app and a phone.
Like
You should be
everybody
able to
does
generally
now.
look at it and say and realize whether it's good for you. So there's still a, if you're diabetic and you're in the store, you might have to shift in some other directions. But so that interface between you and the store should be simplified. But how do you pull that off? There's a lot of complexity. An iPhone is really quite easy to use. Whenever they do an update, they spend $100 million coding it correctly to make it easy to use. So the orchestration in the background is hard. And now drilling down into what Ellen just said is, The way you get this is the marketing team at Kraft might say, look, we know that certain customers are willing to listen to a message about protein.
50%, they say.
So that's a fine thing for a marketing person to identify. But then there's a responsibility to sort of say, okay, well, if they want more protein, why do they want it? Okay, they GLP-1 or whatever their reason. So now we understand why. Let's make sure we achieve that outcome, not the label. Let's achieve the outcome. And then they're like, well, that's hard. It's like, well, sure, it's hard. But we already just in publishing the post, we get an ingredients company coming forward and saying, we want to take that position and we want to do the studies. And so we're now getting to the point that people are prepared to start doing this and where measuring outcomes is something that pharmaceuticals do on a regular basis. We're now starting to see that certain food companies are willing to step forward and say, yes, we want to do human trials on the food we're producing. And then back, do more than a label. But we saw this at KDD. KDD went through and did human-based outcomes. KDD is a processed food company in Kuwait.
Kuwait, Danish dairy.
Yeah, so they did this and they didn't even tell customers. They just basically said, we think our food's not great for people and we want to improve it. And they went through the process of changing their ingredients out so that it was healthier for people. And then they just released it. They tested it on humans. They saw that there was an improvement on glycemic response and they just released it. And they never did a lot of advertising on it. They didn't change the price. They just felt like as a food company, they had a responsibility to deliver a better product, and they did. That's System C thinking.
When you talk about better ingredients, there are so many variables that would factor into that. Just take mac and cheese, Kraft's mac and cheese. Well, where did you get the wheat, for example? What was the soil conditions that the wheat was grown in? People often say, well, I often respond to the, if we are what we eat, then we are also what we ate as well, because it goes all the way back to the beginning of the food chain, back to system A, I guess. And how are we to track all of the variables? You talk about AI. Is that a key to tracking all of those variables?
It's AI reduces the friction. AI allows an entrepreneur to do one entrepreneur to do the work of 20. And so the advantage is people that see these opportunities, AI removes the friction to say, let's act on it. We have in our investing for the last 10 years, we have been investing very specifically along that entire supply chain. So we have companies that can measure the effect on your genomics and your proteomics. Investments in companies that can measure the macro and micronutrients, and they're taking the cost of those macros and micronutrient tests from $2,500 a sample to $100 a sample. So they're reducing that price and making it more available. We have another set of companies that can take an understanding of the microbiome and the nutrients and look at all different sorts of ingredients and mix and match those so that they're compatible with each other in the food. And that they deliver the nutritional expectations. So they sort of help you engineer and design the products on the processed food side, but then also on the natural food side, on the whole food side. We then have other companies that are focused on plant, looking at the plant and its nutritional qualities, what's expressed, biologics that replace synthetic fertilizers so that the micronutrients are preserved in the growing process.
It seems like, Carter and Ellen, that we are going to be given all of these new ways of looking at ourselves and our bodies and what goes on inside of us, is that we are going to become the ultimate guinea pigs.
100%. So, can I take a minute to talk about that, or are we
Yeah,
if we're
you could take 2 minutes and then we're out.
okay. Well, I'll leave you with this, because this if we so I will say this: you should come on our show, and we should talk about this more, because that is why it is in part why we have AI agents, is to understand what AI unlocks. We are trying to solve a, once in a century, once in multi-century design challenge here of reconnecting agriculture and food and healthcare back into an economy around human outcomes. And that requires a type of computational power that we quite and problem solving and design that we quite simply couldn't have done, I think, with our own human brain. So there's a tremendous amount. But one of the things that I've done is really gone deep into AI, even on my own health, to understand what just Claude in its simple form today, Anthropic, will do. And it is profound. There was a piece I put out, I think you probably saw it, I wrote it this week, around the tail of my hamstring. I was able to assemble, by using Claude, I was basically able to assemble a four panel perspective on a hamstring injury. And so that connects the dots, Michael, with food. And
We are going to become guinea pigs.
we are, we already are.
And well, of course we are, but now we're going to be able to see it.
Yes.
Well, Carter Williams, Ellen Brown, thank you both for joining me. This has been an incredibly fascinating conversation to be continued, right?
Good. Yes, to
Okay.
be continued.
Glad to talk anytime.
Yeah. And thank you for reaching across the table at Expo West
Of
and
course.
sharing your power outlet with us.
Of
Thank you
course.
both. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.